Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, it is officially over. Before we couldn't say it was officially over, now we can. It's officially over. Over. Next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
There was a feeling of inevitability coming here before Tuesday's 121-110 win for the Suns. Antonio's win Tuesday officially eliminated the Lakers. It's still kind of crazy that we're at this place that we are now. Even though we all knew it was coming, to me at least, it's still kind of amazing.
It's surreal. There's no way around it. I mean, even with all of the evidence piling up from, hell, forget the regular season opening, the preseason, when the things were very disjointed and they weren't playing particularly well. They lost every single damn game offered to them as a possibility. It still is crazy to think that with 10 spots to just put yourself in the opportunity to make the postseason, like 10 teams get in there, that this team wouldn't make it, even with all of the context that we are well aware of, whether you're talking about injuries, whether you're talking about philosophical differences between Frank Vogel and a roster that he clearly did not like, even if you want to talk about Russell Westbrook's ill fit, even if you want to talk about all the different issues that you could look at for overall roster construction, I'm sorry, it's still pretty damn insane that this team did not at least get to the play-in.
They're 17 games under 500. Look, LeBron James didn't play on Tuesday, and that's a trend where they, you know, in the Westbrook and Anthony Davis have played precious few games together this season. I get all this. But 17 games under 500 for a team that, by the way, was 24-24 in late January. So, like, it wasn't good, but it wasn't this. The speed of this collapse and the totality of this collapse, like you say, Andy, it's surreal because, you know, 3 weeks ago, it wasn't like Pollyanna, like everything's great, like we believe the Lakers are going to make this miracle run. It was just like the math still looked like it was going to make it so the Lakers would get in the play-in and then probably get eliminated, whatever. Like this thing went off the rails, like way off the rails, really fast and very thoroughly.
Like, yeah,
to their credit, I guess.
Well, I guess you got to really want it. There's an interesting irony to this team in that the last three or four games, I mean, the first half against Phoenix, they played, I think, fairly well. It was a 5-point deficit heading into halftime. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a team without LeBron going up against Phoenix full strength. And Phoenix has been the best team in the NBA all season, basically wire to wire. There have been, off the top of my head, I don't know if Phoenix has ever been lower than, say, second in the West or second overall, but it hasn't been for very long.
Just to throw that in there, they knew, the Suns knew they had a chance to eliminate the Lakers today.
Yeah.
And there was a 0% chance once that became official, they're going to win that game anyway. But once they knew they could eliminate the Lakers Tuesday night, there was a 0% chance they weren't going to throttle them. Because they don't the Lakers.
No, and I think that really sunk into them during halftime. And the third quarter, they came out and absolutely buried the Lakers. It was a Devin Booker in particular onslaught, but a lot of different guys: Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, Chris Paul, Jay Crowder. They all had big contributions.
Tom Chambers,
but Googs. But you know, the first half though, I think to be fair to the Lakers, they played well in this game, and the last, I don't know, three, four, handful of games, the Lakers have had more, I think, consistent urgency in the way that they've played than they often had over the course of this season, almost in a way where where even though urgency and effort and focus, you know, something that we've talked about a lot, hell, they've talked about a lot over this year, was a recurring theme that never seemed to, permanently motivate them. Mm-hmm. This seemed to be, over the last week and change, the time where they were realizing, holy bleep, we really may end up missing the play-in. And that urgency, and I think overall focus, had kicked in, but it was way too late. And in a lot of ways, an absolute scathing indictment of the complacency that we'd seen over the course of the season. Just in, I think the real recognition of, guys, we have to do more. We have to always be playing at the absolute top of whatever we can do, even if the top isn't good enough. It seemed like it took a long time for them to really recognize, like, no, really, we may end up missing the play-in.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But sometimes I couldn't notice the difference. It's like, you know, the let me explain what I mean. Not that sometimes you can tell they're more focused. Sometimes you can tell they're playing better. Certainly Russ, in one of the 8,000 different ways he seemed to be trolling Lakers fans this season, continues to put up decent numbers over the last 10 games. You know, did it again on Tuesday. But the reason I say whether it matters is because, like you said, the end result, even when they're putting the effort in, and even when they seem like it's more focused, in the end, they're still losing these games. And
that's fine. I can tell the difference.
Okay.
I'm not saying
the other side of that coin is this roster is woefully inadequate.
No argument.
And, you know, it remained so on Tuesday, where even if you're willing to put Russell Westbrook in the category of a star, and I don't think either one of us really would put him there at this point, like a genuine elite level star, they're not fielding an NBA roster around it, and that's a huge problem. Let's look at some of the stuff that people said after the game, because Frank Vogel is not long for this gig. Anthony Davis said some really interesting stuff, as did Carmelo Anthony. If we have time, Andy, we'll get to LeBron James and whether or not he's going to play again this year, and more reaction to Magic Johnson's media tour earlier this week, which is a breath of fun for us, at least. Let's do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Shady Rays, an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 sunglasses for the fraction of that price. It means polarized lenses, well-constructed, durable frames, and premium high-end finishes, plus something you won't find anywhere else, Shady Rays' insane protection programs. Shady Rays includes a lost and broken protection on every single pair. They'll send you a brand new pair if you lose them, no matter what happens. So, like, I don't care how irresponsible or frankly stupid you are, Shady Rays has you covered. Give them a try. If you don't like them, you'll pay nothing. It's as simple as that, especially knowing that 10 meals are donated to fight hunger in America when you shop with Shady Rays. That's really awesome. That's pretty fantastic. Exclusively also for Locked On listeners, head to ShadyRays.com. Use the code Locked On to get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's code Locked On for the best deal of the season. 50% off two or more pairs of Shady Rays sunglasses. They're backed by over 150,000 verified five-star reviews.
I'll tell you what, Andy, if Shady Rays wasn't a valued sponsor of the network, if they weren't a reputable and excellent sunglasses company, I would say that sounds like the kind of place where the Lakers shop for their off-season blueprint going into the season. Where'd you guys pick that up? Oh, we picked it up at Shady Rays. We're very excited about what's coming.
Spent a lot of time shopping at Shady Rob's. That feels like the problem for them. Mm. Shady Rambis.
So my son asked me today, he said, is the Lakers coach going to get fired? And I said, yes. Yes, he is. Frank looked like a guy speaking after the game on Tuesday who certainly is prepared for that to be coming. Pointed to injuries, pointed to that stuff, but his status and, you know, this sort of dead man walking thing has also been an uncomfortable sidelight of what we've been seeing over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Luke Walton's last season with the Lakers when, you know, it took very few games early in the season for Magic to make it perfectly clear that Luke Walton's seat was extremely hot and that he was already scrutinizing Luke and not seeing what he liked. And that just created this cloud over the season. And it made it so Luke, who, you know, there had already been questions about whether or not he would be the guy to begin with, just because he wasn't Magic's pick, he wasn't Pelinka's pick. But by the time Luke and the organization eventually parted ways, they had to get rid of him because mm-hmm. it was clear that Magic, the guy who ultimately was at the top of the food chain when it came to basketball decisions, I mean, beyond Genie, did not believe in Luke. And it didn't matter how many times Genie would talk him up publicly. Genie also kept making it clear, ultimately, these are decisions that Magic and Rob Pelinka make. And it just reached a point where I remember writing articles for The Athletic when we were covering the team for that site. You know, there was a month and a half, 2 months left in the season. I'm like, they got to fire Luke. Like, you can't do this anymore. This is where the Lakers are at with Frank Vogel. And it was clear once they gave him the fake extension.
And you thought, just to put things in context, remember where we were. We thought that's what was going to happen when Magic Johnson strode up to the podium for an impromptu press conference. But instead, he just done left the organization in the lurch.
That was nuts. Weird. I, as somebody who was quite literally standing next to Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm. You became a meme.
I did become a meme. I went bug-eyed. Like, I really, truly was like, what?
And Savory cartoon.
I mean, I can tell you, there was not a single person in that scrum, including Lakers PR, including the most plugged-in media people who've covered the Lakers for decades. Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, and so, to get back to Frank here, it's like, I don't think he should come back. I mean, I don't think you can't bring him back after a disaster like this. You just can't do it. And I also don't think Frank necessarily, as much as I don't think he's the problem, he wasn't the solution either. I don't think he did a good enough job that you could say it's not fair to fire the guy or whatever.
To be honest, Brian, real quick,
he wants to do this again.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, he's under contract for next year. So if the contract is honored, you know, Frank Vogel is a man of honor. He'll be back. But I imagine there is a part of him that will be relieved when he gets told
all of it. Because like you said, to your point about Magic and support and Luke, they already chopped his knees out by only giving him the 1 year anyway. The part that I find really intriguing is not, does Frank Vogel deserve to be fired? It's, will the front office, what role will the front office say that Vogel played in the disaster of this year? How much will they put on him in a way that removes culpability from themselves? And how much will they look at the next coach and give them the freedom, give them the, you know, how much will they pay? It's those issues to me that make the coaching part of tonight's conversation interesting.
Well, and that also too, it gets to the idea of what could have been with this team. And, you know, that's been a theme over the course of the season. It was something that a lot of guys were asked about afterwards, Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, Anthony Davis. And it was interesting hearing AD in particular talk about this, because we're not very far removed from him saying that last year, you know, had he has stayed healthy, the Lakers would have beaten the Suns in the first round. You know, we're not very
boy, that feels I maintain that is true. I am unwilling to say that a healthy AD would get the Lakers past the Suns this year.
Right.
I do not think that's true.
Right. I mean, and you know, it doesn't really matter at this point, but we're also not very far removed from AD being pretty insistent that this team, if healthy, could do a lot of really good things. And tonight, you didn't hear AD back off that stance. And he made a lot of references to health. And there was a lot of, look, you know, when I'm not here this much, LeBron misses this much, different guys are in and out of the lineup. Guys who are supposed to be playing 15 minutes play 30. Kendrick Nunn never put on a uniform in the regular season. These are all things that obviously and reasonably will cut down on your potential for success. But you also started hearing a little bit more uncertainty in AD's tone in terms of what was the ceiling for this team.
I don't know how he started an answer with, I don't know how good we would have been after talking about the injuries and whatever, but like that we never got a chance to find out. But you know, to this point, we both texted each other at exactly the same time, noticing that phrase. And not again, that it's important to note, AD was not being like, I don't know how good we are. Like, but it's just this idea. I wonder how much they've been thinking about that of like, okay, really what was the ceiling? Even if everybody had stayed healthy, where would we have been? Because heretofore, it had all been like, man, if we were healthy, we'd be making noise. And there was just that little bit of doubt, that little bit of introspection and wondering. I just wonder, Andy, how much that is sort of common throughout everybody on the roster, like where they just are all kind of understanding the reality that this probably wasn't going to work the way it was supposed to, even if guys had been healthy.
I mean, I hope that there is a recognition that there's, this wasn't going, they would have been better than this. I mean, I have no doubt.
Obviously.
Yeah. They would have been, had everybody stayed reasonably healthy, they'd have been a playoff team. Like I think they would have been, you know, above a play-in team.
Top six, probably. I think if everybody's healthy.
Right. If everybody stays reasonably healthy, I think, and reasonably just available, I think they're a legitimate playoff team. But it became pretty clear pretty quickly that everybody at reasonably full strength, they still were going to be fit issues that needed to be not just overcome, like almost like what the hell do you do with them?
Well, I think and we actually noted this early in the season that what they were setting themselves up potentially was a situation where the whole logic of the Westbrook trade, which was take pressure off of LeBron, make it easier for LeBron, make it easier for AD, wasn't going to work because you actually were putting yourselves in a situation where LeBron and AD would both have to be better than they were a year ago and better than they've been. And LeBron, at least to some degree, when he played, was able to, I think, achieve that at least some. But that's not, well, a season of that, I think, would have been made it very clear that the ceiling for the team, they lowered it to a place where they weren't going to be able to win a title. And
yeah, I also thought it was interesting, Brian, that Carmelo Anthony afterwards acknowledged the pressure that exists for a team like this. You know, and I asked him about it, just sort of like, there's a lot of guys in this locker room who've done a lot and been through a lot. There are guys who've won championships, scoring titles, MVPs, all sorts of different stuff. And collectively, there's a lot of been there, done that, and a lot of scrutiny these guys have gone through in their careers anyway. Do you still feel pressure even with that? And I think Melo recognized, like, okay, I could be setting up a headline like pressure did in the Lakers, like, and he was trying to avoid something like that. And, you know, he said, like, I can't speak for how everybody internalizes the pressure or deals with the pressure, confronts it, whatever. This wasn't something that personally did me in, but it is something that we're all aware of. And look, all these guys feel pressure. Like Kobe in game 7 against the Celtics. I mean, this is a guy that already won 4 championships and MVP. There was nobody in the league other than maybe Tim Duncan who had been through and done that than Kobe. Kobe wigged out in game 7 by his own admission. The magnitude of everything at stake, game 7 against the Boston Celtics, like the not wanting to lose to that core twice in 3 years, it was too much for him. Like, again, by his admission.
Mm-hmm.
If that can happen to Kobe, it can happen to anybody.
And I thought the fact that Melo acknowledged mm-hmm. that the pressure was a real thing, acknowledged that that to me was kind of fascinating. And I think fits into the context of kind of what we're talking about here, because there's a world in which the pressure isn't such a big deal because they're kind of winning, but that wasn't the world we're living in. So let's talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. Eating smart, but also enjoying what you're eating. It's never tasted better. You can treat yourself without feeling guilty with Built Bar. If you have not tried the Puffs, you are missing out on one of Built Bar's best tasting bar, the first ever protein-infused marshmallow, fluffy, marshmallowy, not just a protein bar, they're a treat covered in 100% real chocolate. Awesome, really cool flavors like cinnamony churro, coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie. They're all going to feel like your favorites. And unlike a candy bar, which is usually 200 to 300 calories that just stick right in your belly and you don't feel great, you definitely don't look great. Most Built Bars, they're only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, but 17 grams of protein. And that's the good stuff. Always really cool, unique flavor combinations. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCKED15, 15% off at built.com.
So Carmelo Anthony, Andy, acknowledged the fact that the pressure on this team was significant, and it was there, and it was something that they knew. And like, it's like you said, he didn't say that it did them in, at least not personally. But I was, you know, a lot of times guys will pretend that that's not even a thing. And I absolutely believe that the pressure made it worse, that the chatter made it worse, that all the stuff on Russ made it worse. It's probably not a coincidence that he started playing better as the Lakers fell out of contention. It kind of didn't matter. I don't care how seasoned they are. It just squeezes things a little bit tighter. You know, when you're a team that's got a lot of shortcomings anyway, that can't help.
They were having no fun all year. Mm-hmm. I mean, this season has been, and I'm sure this will be cold comfort for a lot of Laker fans, because this has been as unpleasant a rooting experience as any time I've ever been around the Lakers, whether professionally, whether rooting for them personally as a fan, which for me began in the early 90s. This is as good a reason as any to thank all of you who've been there for this journey, for this season, because my God, it has not been easy. So we truly do appreciate the loyalty.
It is going to be a spicy offseason, so stick around for that.
If it is any comfort to the Laker fans who've suffered through this, I can assure you they were having just as little fun as you are. They didn't enjoy it one bit.
Right. The pressure is something that you can have.
LeBron having the time of his life, lying his ass off.
Yes.
I hope. I really, truly hope.
A couple moments. Like, LeBron's had a couple misses with a few of those things. The April joke about how I'm done for the year. Read the room, man. Wrong day for that.
Sadly, it wasn't even that much of a joke.
Right. We'll see. I mean, we may not get to it today, but you know, for Thursday's show, the whole notion of whether or not LeBron actually does play in two more games and then, you know, before the end of the season to try to qualify for the scoring title, then go win it, is a really interesting one, and how Lakers fans would react. But yeah, I mean, like, if they're playing well, if they're having fun, the pressure of, oh, can you get this thing through? Can LeBron play at an MVP level? All this other stuff, even if you acknowledge that these three guys are going to have to play kind of superhuman ball, that's fun for them. I think that gives an edge to the Carmelos and then, you know, Avery Bradley and, you know, Austin Reeves and some of the other guys who, like you said before, are the forgotten dudes of like, hey, we can play ball too. That elevates them. But when it's this crushing thing that you know is going to be coupled with the reality of like this, the team isn't good enough. Oh my God, does that suck the energy out of the room? It's impossible to kind of decompress and put things back together, give yourself a break, any of that. They had none of that this year. And look, that's what they signed up for. But it does impact, I think, your ability to pull yourself out to whatever extent they were able to, given the injuries, given the roster imperfections and shortcomings. The context didn't help either. Everything about this season was sucked.
No. And then on top of it, it all ended up being viewed for reasons that at times were unfair, at times totally fair, but either way, always understandable. Everything was viewed through the prism of Russ. And Russ, beyond the issues that happened on the court and fit, and you know, the period of turnover palooza, and you know, all the different stuff, and the ways that the skeptics felt about this trade were made, you know, pretty evidently right pretty early on. There was also the way Russ outwardly handled all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I can imagine what that had been like in the locker room. And there, you know, there have been reports all season about discord, you know, going leading into the trade deadline, where apparently everybody seemed to want to move on from Russ, including the Lakers and Russ, including Russ, you know, and that Russ was looking for a new home and all of this. You know, you can imagine how that felt inside that locker room, how it sometimes manifests on the court, but it made the experience of this team that much worse, because he was unlikable. And he always became a reminder of, it didn't have to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in some ways that's not fair to Russ, but in some ways it's totally fair to him.
And what's interesting, and you know, and to your credit, you warned me about that this could happen. You know, I always, as a person who watched Westbrook, you know, he comes into the building and he does me I've always admired not everything about his game, but the energy, the effort, the kind of force with which he plays and has. But the difference is that guy, at least up until maybe the first half of last year, signs of deterioration, whatever, broadly speaking, you know, prime Russ was always really good. So that's the thing about it. It's like, you know, you could find the shortcomings, but that guy was always really good. He, you know, he made the All 75 team for a reason. That's not the guy that they had this year, but the stuff was still there in terms of, you know, media, in terms of accountability, in terms of fit and difficulty there. All that stuff is none of the good, except for, you know, maybe 10 games out of the year where you could, oh, maybe it's coming. It didn't happen. And like, I think you're exactly right. The Prism of Russ, which sounds like the worst concept album of all time, like prog rock gone wrong, like that made it all that much worse. Season was going to hinge on whether or not Russ was fun.
It's funny, actually. I was thinking about this because some of Russ's post-game pressers have been, like I said, they have not been sessions that were going to endear him to fans any more than he already hadn't. And, you know, he was asked after this game about, you know, internal belief, you know, on this team. And, you know, he said, I can't speak to everybody else's belief. I know I always had it. And on one hand, like, I guess that's something you could say. But on another hand, it feels like a very I do me style of leadership. And for Russ's stature and pay and all that stuff, there's some leadership expected that didn't seem like it was there. And in thinking also, too, about, you know, the way Russ has always been described as, no matter what you think of the way he plays, you know, he's always just this hyper-competitive dude that's always going to be out there bringing it. Like, that's just his style. I was thinking about that, and the comparison that I'm about to make, it's not apples to apples, but I think you'll understand what I mean. And before anybody gets put off, what I'm about to say has nothing to do with politics. It's not going down this road. I just want to use who I'm about to use to illustrate a point. Like, Donald Trump is often described by people as a fighter. You know, he's a fighter. That's what he does. He's been called like a bare knuckles brawler. You know, somebody that's always up for a fight. And I don't agree, because I think Donald Trump is a feuder. And he's somebody that's always motivated by the personal nature of conflicts, and somebody that always looks for foils in his fight. And I don't want to get into the why, because it's irrelevant to any of this. I'm just saying there is a difference. And with Russ, he's obviously competitive, because you can't reach this level as an athlete, particularly the levels that he's reached, without being competitive. But in a lot of ways, I think he's more combative than he is competitive. because he personalizes what seems like all levels of competition. It just, there's a very personal, you know, like adversely personal way that he seems to just view all of this stuff, whether you're talking about on the court, whether you're talking about the way that he deals with media, whether you're talking about the way he deals with coaching. You know, it's just, in some ways, it has struck me this year as somebody that's more combative than competitive and just needing sometimes personal conflict as a way to fuel this stuff, as opposed to winning for the sake of winning. And I don't mean that he doesn't care about winning.
No, I get what you're saying.
But I'm just talking about the way he approaches this stuff, because there's so much combativeness, so much adversarial with Russ, that a lot of times you're just watching going, I don't get what you're doing, but I especially don't get what you're doing at this stage of your career
Because you're talking about Russ making adjustments. This is in our debate we've had all season long, what he's capable of. I think Russ is so devoted to being this guy and so devoted to his style of play and defending his style of play that there isn't anything else there. And it is combative, because when you take shots at Russ, you're taking shots at his sort of basketball ethos and the way he's done it forever. Sure. And that doesn't change this year just because he didn't play well. And it's a hard thing for him to unwind mentally. It's something we'll have a lot of time, but it's a really, really salient point, and I think a good one that you're making.
Like Trump, he is a feuder that way, as opposed to a fighter. And again,
Of Russ, the feud is the debate about Russell Westbrook as a basketball player.
Yeah.
And the value that he brings and the quality that he brings and all that stuff. And so Russ is always essentially defending himself in the same way, you know, sort of Kobe fans. We're always in this position, like sort of absolute defending Kobe or not. Interesting thing that he's a player who does that, because there is no adjustment. Anyway, lots of stuff that we'll continue with. We'll get to more of stuff Russ said. We'll get to LeBron. We'll get to more from Magic, which I'm sure he'll have more things to say. He's not done. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Continue to support us there. We really appreciate it. We'll see everybody on Thursday.